And now we want to take up the College Board's plan to expand the rollout of the overall disadvantage level. That's a numerical rating system to figure out what's impacting students. It could be medium family income, percentage of a home on food stamps, percentage of adults with agricultural jobs, and consider the so-called adversity index in judging SATs. Well, the plan's getting mixed reactions, but our next guest says it might help kids like the one he once was, in rural areas. 59% of rural high school grads go to college, fewer than urban and suburban kids. They're also much more likely to drop out, and only 29% of rural residents, 18 to 24, are in college, compared to 47% in the rest of the country. Tony Rehagen explored all this for the Boston Globe. He joins us from St. Peter's, Missouri, where he lives. And Tony, you point out this gap in admissions and say this could help rural kids.
Yeah, that's the hope anyway. It's something that's interesting. I come from an extremely rural background. I come from a town in central Missouri of about 300 people. My graduating class was 28. And I just remember my experience kind of being bewildered. I went to Mizzou, which is our big mm-hmm. state university here. Mm-hmm. And it really kind of dawned on me how it kind of shaped my life. I grew up quite conservative. And just as happenstance, you know, I went to a big college. For the first time, I was around people that were different than me politically, ethnically, racially, and religiously. And it really opened my eyes to things. And it did change me. My views are much more left now. But it's not even that. It's more about the fact that I was forced to kind of defend and challenge my own beliefs and opinions in the face of differences. And I think that's something that we don't really have as much of nowadays. I think that's what's really lacking in our political discourse is that empathy.
Yeah. Well, so you've said a lot here. So let's take a deeper look. First of all, you go to the University of Missouri, 1997, like 20% of everybody else in America. You came from this small town, very conservative family. You'd sit and, as you write, grumble along with your father as you listen to Rush Limbaugh and read George F. Will. Nothing wrong with that. Most of the people in your family had not even gone to high school. They were needed in farms. You realize that, you know, nothing wrong with farming, but you wouldn't have been very good at it. You know,
that would have been awful at it.
These weren't your skills. So off you go to college. And as you say, like, you're confronted with things you never heard or saw in your very small town. What were some of those things?
I mean, just something as simple. I lived in a co-ed dorm where every other floor was boy, girl. So for the first time I'm living around, you know, women in close proximity. People at my next door dorm mate was from Istanbul. At my first time around a large population of African-American students, you know, you'd start meeting them. I went to a black fraternity party. You know, I go to the local mosque, and this was back in the 1990s. So, kind of the pride movement was going on. You get kind of swept up in that, and you really kind of get to see it firsthand. And you realize that these opinions that you've had and these political views you've had that were based solely on what you've read from the outside world, because what you see in front of you is very homogenous and very unquestioning. You get to see the people behind these statistics and these political positions. And you get to really, it's about empathy. And it's something it seems simple, but I think it's lacking nowadays.
Well, this is another thing you note, that there's been a right-wing anti-intellectualism movement that many rural Americans are buying into, and it's being told to them that universities are hatcheries for liberalism, socialism, any other ism. Is this something you heard?
No, but I did hear from people, because I had other friends who did go to college from my small town who did not, and my parents went to college, and they did not, they did not convert to liberalism, and you know, they kind of teased me and razzed me about, you know, being indoctrinated by that. And it is. I mean, it's a lot of this, especially the things we're talking about nowadays, you know, immigration, terrorism. It plays on xenophobia. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. It's just that fear of the other. And when you don't live around the other, that fear is so easy to nurture and to play off of and to really take advantage of, which I think is a shame.
Well, so you talk about this sort of anti-intellectualism movement, which is very sad, by the way. I mean, do you find that sad?
Yeah, I do. I find it sad that people are turning their back on science and fact in general. And I don't think that's a strictly conservative thing, but they seem to have institutionalized it and are really kind of playing on it But I mean, when you're talking about climate change, which may be the biggest threat that any of us are facing right now, you know, that's they're able to kind of turn their backs on scientific fact and then the agreement of all these scientists, people that are experts in this. And it's, you know, anti-expertism. I mean, I'm not sure if that's even the right word, but this idea that, you know, they know better just because, and that's not just conservative. That's a lot of people who just have a kind of disdain for people, for intellectuals and for people who are experts in their field, especially when it comes to science. And again, it plays on the idea that if you don't understand it, it's something to be feared, like physics, which is terrifying. If you don't know anything about it, but that's why you make yourself trust the physicist.
Right. Well, and by the way, you say that schools are playing into this narrative somewhat by banning speech that they consider extreme, that you say this students are expected to use this highly edited and careful language. And you think that there's some danger there as well. You know, people on the liberal side of the equation might not be hearing viewpoints that they should be hearing. But I want to put that aside for a second because – so you talk about the gap between those who go to college and those don't in terms of economics but also in terms of politics, as we just heard, you know, that this has to do with the political divide in the country. But
right.
You also point out that – people in rural areas are not sought after by colleges. Your class of 26 was not going to get any recruiters. You say schools are ignoring them, which another reason why this adversity rating might help make up for that gap.
That's the biggest thing, and at the center of this story, is the idea that it won't allow college recruiters who have so much power now to kind of dictate the diversity of campus makeup to overlook the rural areas. And look, I mean, all this comes down to economics in the end. Like, it's the economics of sending a recruiter out, you know, 2 hours, I mean, in Michigan from University of Michigan up to the Upper Peninsula where there's a lot of rural students. I mean, that could be a multiple hour drive. That's a huge journey to try to, you know, recruit kids from classes as small as mine. But the idea of this index might give the recruiters another kind of insight into these students, not to play into the stereotypes of a rural student, to say that they don't have a college background, that they don't have an interest in it, and that, you know, that they're just farm kids who don't have anything to offer the colleges. My hope is that this adversity index, even if it can't do that on its own, is a sign that recruiters and college institutions are going to start looking a little deeper to kind of get that element onto campus.
Well, and it's not just that they don't go to the schools. A quarter of people in rural areas don't have high-speed broadband, so they're not finding things online.
Right, and that's something people don't realize.
This might overcome some of that. And again, why would it make a difference for you? You're not talking about – well, maybe you are. I don't know. Are you talking about maybe converting some people would be the word that some would use, trying to get more eyes opened about, you know, what you've now seen or –
No, I don't think it's about conversion at all, because I think, like I said, some people that are very important to me, that who are some of the most intelligent people I know, went to college and did not have their political, you know, worlds turned over. That's just my personal experience. Again, I don't think you know what you think and know your opinion until you're forced to defend that opinion. And that's kind of what college is about to me. College is not about the curriculum, not about the tests, the lectures and stuff. It's about kind of living and working and being forced to defend your own opinions. Like, it's easy to talk about, you know, Islamic terrorism and Muslims when you're hours away from the nearest one or you've never met one. But if you're living with one, if you're friends with one, if you're, you know, that puts a different perspective. And it's the same with the intellectualism. If you don't know, if you don't, you know, if you don't have a nuclear physicist in your small town, you go to college and you learn about these things. You kind of see the expertise. And by the way, also it works the other way. If there isn't a small town rural representation on the campus, then all these liberal students who come from the suburbs and from urban areas don't get that exposure in return. So it works both ways.
Well, you've put a lot of hope into this one calculation, this
index.
Adversity rating, yeah.
Yeah, well, and as I said, I'm not even sure it is a cure-all. And my hope is that it's a sign that people are looking into the problem and wanting to address it, that it's getting attention.
That's Tony Rehagen, a writer based in Missouri. Tony, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.